Hospitals and clinics are federally required to provide language assistance services for individuals who speak or understand limited English. However, a study on health disparities found that nearly one-third of hospitals in the country do not provide interpretation services. Our bilingual reporter, Jasmine Orozco-Rodriguez, helps us understand these laws and what they mean for individuals.
Jasmine, how did these laws come about in the first place?
So the legal foundation for language access lies in Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which established that federally funded institutions like hospitals couldn't discriminate based on race or national origin. And this was pretty broad and didn't get more specific until about 2000 when President Bill Clinton signed an executive order that specifically focused on improving the accessibility to federally funded programs, services, and activities. And now, under the Affordable Care Act, more specific provisions have been added requiring that hospitals develop language access plans.
Can you break down what the ACA is now requiring from hospitals on this front?
First, it requires notices to be posted to inform individuals about their rights to language assistance services. Right now, actually, the Department of Health and Human Services is reposting a revision to that requirement due to the costs of mailing the notices being too high and not being very effective in reaching the right people. The other thing the ACA has done is actually prohibit hospitals from relying on low-quality video or telephone services or unqualified staff or translators to interpret. Finally, it requires entities to develop a language access plan to ensure that they can provide meaningful language access to people that need it, adding some accountability.
And so who's affected by the law? Is it just hospitals, or are there other organizations that have to abide by these rules?
Right. So the entities specifically addressed by the law include any health program or activity that receives federal funding from the Department of Health and Human Services. This includes hospitals, clinics, and doctors that accept health insurance, the health insurance marketplaces and their participating issuers, and finally, any program administered by the HHS.
So what happens when hospitals or other institutions don't provide these services?
Honestly, not a whole lot. Individuals who need these services and do not receive them can file a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights within the Health and Human Services Department. But there's not much federal oversight, and hospitals are actually required to hold themselves accountable. One researcher I spoke to is Melody Schifino. She's an assistant professor at San Diego State University. She studies disparities in how healthcare is delivered, and she actually conducted a study where she researched how well hospitals were doing, and here's what she found.
So that really was my impetus to look at this and see exactly how good of a job hospitals were doing policing themselves, and they get about a C-. They're up to a C, I guess.
A big takeaway from her study is that there are areas in the country with language needs and no hospitals that offer those services.
Right. But if this is law, why are hospitals, some of them, not following the law or meeting the requirements?
Along with limited federal oversight, this law is an unfunded mandate. As such, hospitals or healthcare organizations don't receive any funding from the government to provide language access services.
So economically, the hospitals could see a dip in revenue by following this law?
Yes and no. While it costs organizations money to fund language services, it could also be more expensive not to provide them.
How's that?
So Schifino actually compared treating a limited English-speaking patient to treating an unconscious patient, which is pretty serious because they literally may not be able to speak for themselves and then may be subjected to more invasive and unnecessary diagnostic procedures. Those can be costly, and there's also the risk of costly lawsuits.
Well, we'll have to leave it there for today. Jasmine Orozco-Rodriguez, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
And you can go to KUNR.org to see more of Jasmine's reporting and an extended version of this interview. For KUNR News, I'm Michelle Billman.